Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. My name is George Weedman. As usual, we have Jimmy and Matt in here. But we also have a very special guest, the Destructoid UK editor, Polygon RPSN Guardian freelancer, and the infamous Podquisition accomplice, Laura K. Dale, is also in here with us tonight.
Hello, I am here. I am getting a little bit drunk. It's been a very long day, and I am very glad to be in your reputable company, good sirs.
I don't blame you because it's like 10 p.m. over there, right? You're in the Empire.
It's about 10:15 in the evening when we start recording. This is my third podcast of the night.
Jeez. I am running on very little sleep.
Today is one of those days. I was either going to nap all day or I would work, but I'd do it a little bit drunk. So of the two, I decided, let's make up some cocktails and do some drunken working. Why not?
I mean, hey, that's completely appropriate because this is the last TOVG podcast of the year. Should be going up either the day before New Year's Eve or New Year's Eve. So yeah, celebrate. Woo!
Yeah, we're recording on a different day from usual because of New Year's Eve coming up. We also skipped last week because Christmas had come and gone, which probably means that we were away from our computers and maybe didn't play so many video games this time to talk about, even though we did skip a week. But I don't know. I mean, like, I did more of the Earthbound cell phone thing, But besides that, I've mostly been chipping away at Rainbow Six Siege again and the Bloodborne DLC. But back to Earthbound, like, okay, I get people like it and everything, right? I remember liking it as a kid, but holy shit, the like leveling curve in this game is continuously infuriating me.
I think that's an interesting thing that I kind of noticed, especially after finally beating Undertale. I think it was on between our break, I beat Undertale. Which was great. Ending was very surprising. I'm not going to say anything more on that because you know how much of a stickler I am on it. But Undertale has no like leveling curve. You just move forward the whole time, and I really like that. Well, and I think that's why I hate JRPGs for the most part, is because I can't do that. Even in Pokemon, I can't do that.
While I largely agree with you, against Undertale, I will say, if you go through murdering everything, there are some pretty considerable difficulty spikes at times.
That's what I've heard. Mm. And I've only done the initial run, which ended up being neutral for me.
Yeah.
I'm planning on doing Pacifist next, and I guess, I mean, everybody says if you do Pacifist, you're going to be too choked up to do Genocide afterwards, but
I did Genocide, and I regretted it. I feel my sins crawling on my back, and I can never take back what I did, and I feel like the worst kind of human being.
Also,
that's all right. Neutral through Pacifist definitely is a really smooth level curve. You are right on that. Genocide just horribly beats you up with spikes in difficulty that are deliberately unfair because they should be, because you're a terrible human being if you do that way of playing the game.
I feel like going neutral to pacifist to genocide is actually the intended route, which means you are doing it right, Jimmy. That's also the route I went through because if you're doing neutral, then you at least have like a little bit of experience in leveling behind you. When you're doing pacifist, you don't have that luxury, and you also have to put up with more of the shmup Twitch challenges.
Yep.
And genocide is basically like nightmare mode.
Yeah.
Like all the Twitch challenges ramp up to a ridiculous level.
All I will say about genocide is the final boss. I spent, no joke, 7 hours repeatedly fighting.
Jeez.
It was 7 hours of the most, like, I wanted to beat this thing, but as victory was coming close, I realized I regretted everything. It was 7 hours of hell. Forget Bloodborne. This is the true get-good game.
I noticed I don't know. I don't want to talk too much on it because I still feel like there's a grace period where people should be allowed to play this, you know, free of spoilers. But like, I noticed that no matter which choice you take, you get a different kind of boost because like sparing things gives you gold, and gold can buy you like food to keep your health up. So that's how I beat like the last two fights in my neutral run was I just bought a whole bunch of food because I had so much gold because I only killed like two things the whole game. So yeah, but if you go the other way, you actually get permanent health. And so it's a nice, interesting balance between, I don't know. I won't go on for too long. I'm sure everyone's sick of hearing from Undertale.
I can't get enough.
Yeah.
I have been upset. Like I was a bit I was a little bit resistant to play Undertale at first. Once I played it, it's now been one of those games that's just stuck in my head for months on end. I've finally got around to doing an LP of it because people have been bugging me to do it for months, and I'm like, no, you don't want to see that. I've already played it, but I'm like, fine, I like this game. I'll go through it again. Gosh, make me play games I enjoy sometimes. Ugh.
How dare you?
I know that. That is a video game.
Ugh. On my bus ride to the family for Christmas, I was literally listening to an Undertale cover album on the ride to and from.
Ooh, was that the official one?
It was made by Ace Waters, who is a personal accomplice, and also collaborating Rachad. With another Rachad with two A's, right? Mm. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty fun time. There's a super sick cover of the freaking Tim Shop in there that I was cracking up at.
Yes. That is I'm really proud of those guys, by the way. Freaking Ace just really pulled it together. He started doing one song a week on his channel like sometime last year.
Yeah,
made it all the way this far, and now he has a officially sanctioned Undertale fan album that Toby allowed them to make and sell.
God damn.
So that's
I don't feel bad about work. This. Plug it. YouTube channel Ace Waters. Well, Ace Waters is his name. His channel's called Motive Makes a Man. Super duper great video game covers. Mm-hmm. The guy is like insanely dedicated, pushes a new song out at least every week with like kids and a family.
Yeah.
And also just made a cover album for Undertale that's a lot of fun. So
yeah, him and also Rachad EB did all the metal covers on that album. Go check it out. It's called Determination. I think you can find it on Bandcamp. Super good. Anyways,
but
sorry.
Yeah, besides that, I've been playing a lot of Rainbow Six Siege, which got a very negative review on Jim Sterling's website. Thank you very much. But I freaking love this game, and it's just getting lambasted so hard by the press that any bit of good press I find, I retweet and try to share the love. But I know I because I've been doing this, Ubisoft sent me console codes for it. I gave one to Matt and passed out the rest to Twitter. And Matt, I hear that you also had some very positive impressions.
Yeah, because I'm used to playing the old games, and I spent I spent a few months of my childhood staying in and playing Rambo 6 Vegas 1 and 2. And it has like the same feeling of that. And it's just fun. I like games with when you could put on a set of open back headphones and just hear everything around you.
Oh, the sound design is so good.
Yeah, and you just hear like little footsteps and the tension just builds up and you're like, oh snap, oh snap. Like, is he around the corner? Is he above me?
You can tell where the footsteps are by like the amount of echo in them. It changes per room. And if you punch a hole in a wall, you'll start hearing sounds more clearly from the other side of the wall. There's a video they made about how there's an extremely complicated 3D sound algorithm going on in this game that makes everyone shutting up, but also precisely telling each other what they're hearing enough to have the whole team paint a mental image of what's going on in the whole map. And there are like so many games in this app, so many moments in this game that literally blow my mind. There was one player on my team who's really, really good who got a surprising kill straight through a wall. In any other game, it would have looked like he had a wall hack turned on. But what he said after the kill was, I started spraying into the wall to hear him freak out to find out where he was in the map.
Dang.
And then he was able to just like wall bang the door frame that this other opponent was in by the sound of ah!
That is damn impressive. I will give you that. I've been playing some of Siege, and I feel like I should like it more than I do. I am not going to deny that it is a fantastically made game. I think that the audio design is superb. I don't know why I can't get into it, and I wish I had an answer for that. Because I look at it and I'm like, everything about this game, I really like all of the individual components. Put them together and it's just not gelling for me.
What platform are you playing on?
I've been playing on PS4.
Okay, well, I might have found one of your problems. Now, well, do you have...
That would be the problem, obviously. I know.
Yeah.
I was given a console code. That's what I had.
What are you doing playing Rainbow Six on the Bloodborne box? Get out of here.
Well, no, like the accuracy of mouse aiming really changes the game. I don't know. I haven't actually played one of the console versions, but I've read a lot of testimonials from people talking about how much more sense it makes when you can snap aim.
Because I got the PS4 code, and so I was also playing it on PS4. Mm. And I used to be a console head way back, but now going back to the PS4, I feel like I can't aim for the head like I can on my mouse and keyboard. I feel like it's a little sloppy with the aim assist as well, and it just doesn't feel right. You know,
well, they really want you to be making those headshots.
Yeah, like I'm aware that I'm playing it on PS4. Like I'm trying not to let the fact that this isn't mouse and keyboard aiming affect my opinion too much. But yeah, it's just not quite gelling for me, and I don't quite know why. Because it feels incredibly polished.
The thing is, on PC, when you can climb your recoil up to the head part of a model, the time to kill is so super duper fast that the game becomes more about planning your crosshair placement than actually twitching and reacting quickly, which turns the whole game into something that's more about, just like Rainbow Six is supposed to be, it's more about tactics and planning than it is Call of Duty run and gunning.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, in that case, Ubisoft, get on getting me PC code, please, because PS4 apparently not cutting it.
Once you do, I have a Skype room with like 15 people in it called it's ridiculous. There are people from every time zone in here. There's always someone to play with, and usually we can get a 5-person group together pretty easily. And I think that's the other big gatekeeper to really seeing the fantastic potential behind this game is having a group of friends who are always ready to play it on PC. Because once you do that, it's all of a sudden like playing a super high-level clan match of Counter-Strike, which is one of my favorite things in the world. So I'm really glad that a good Counter-Strike clone has finally come out. And like Matt was talking about how it's harkening back to like old Rainbow Six games, particularly the Vegas ones. And I think this is a nice middle ground between the Vegas games and also
Ghost Recon,
the ones before then. Yeah, like the Ghost Recons in the earlier Rainbow Six games, where it was almost one hit kill rules of engagement with like no gun model on the screen and just two movement speeds, slow and slower. there's no third person cover system, no scripted sequences, no tutorials and kill streaks splashing pop-ups all over the screen. And I really like the results of a big evil publisher like Ubisoft making a kind of small scale humble project like that again.
I feel like this game, it's so easy to miss the point of it and you're not kind of like... I mean, obviously, it's not for everyone, but I feel like when you have like, because I'm a big fan of Gears of War, and it's definitely not well made in the sound area as well as this is, but it's one of those things where you have the simple like mechanics there. You know, you break down walls. You can put these walls. Each class has a different, you know, like rock paper scissors thing going on with the way you can put stuff up, and when it comes down to it, like there was this moment where I was new to the game and I was just jumping in and no one was talking on my team, which kind of sucks. So you got to play with people. But I was the only guy left and it was just this one other guy and I had to defuse the bomb. So it was a mind game of where's the other guy has to defuse the bomb, and I have to keep him from doing it because the bomb is already armed. And it's like, okay, what do I do here? Do I wait him out? Do I go for it? Is he already disarming it? And this is those moments that, like, I feel like define the game for me. And
yeah,
that's the moments I look for. And what happened was I waited him out for like the last couple seconds, and then I heard his footsteps and I heard him running across the hall. So I came around the corner and I just popped his head before he ran around and disarmed it. It was the greatest thing. I was just like, oh my gosh, like those high intense moments. And yeah, if you don't experience those things, you're gonna be like, it's whatever. And I would say definitely PC with a couple friends would probably be the optimal way. And I don't think this is one of those things like, oh, you know, you have friends, that means it's better. Anything is better with friends. But I think this one actually has, you know, after like the full couple days that I played with it, I had a good blast and had a lot of those moments like that I haven't really had in other games like Call of Duty and stuff. They don't really tickle my fancy anymore. And it's been a while since a shooter has actually like drawn me in.
Right.
Because
The brilliance of it is that it's a AAA attempt to streamline the really bizarre psychological tricks you see of a high-level Counter-Strike game, particularly the mind games and paying attention to sound and just basically finding different ways to toy with the patience that situation requires. Like, this game really, really tests your patience. And when you play it at the a more challenging game of ranked, the victories just feel so satisfying because you have to fight so many temptations to run in and be a hero, which is still always possible because it's real time and still Twitch based at its core. But there are so many counterbalances put in place to get people playing more patiently and slowly and carefully than that. And I'm having the time of my life for this game that has super shitty reviews and microtransactions and horrible netcode issues. I wasn't expecting to be this sympathetic for Rainbow Six Siege, but it was literally like one of the biggest surprises of the year for me.
Yeah, Rainbow Six Siege is not the worst video game in the world, regardless of what the internet might tell you.
I feel like it's criminally underrated. A Kotaku Australia editorial was put out yesterday making the exact same claims, and that makes me super happy. But yeah, what else is there that we've been playing over the holidays?
I didn't play much, but I did play this short game. It came out recently. It was around 2 hours. I think it was called Star Wars The Force Awakens. it was pretty good.
Was it?
I see what you did there.
Someone tweeted at me, is like, "Oh, make sure you mention Star Wars in the podcast." So there you go. I mentioned it. I don't know if I can actually talk about it, but
it was mentioned.
I thought you were talking about The Force Unleashed. And I was like, oh yeah, that game everyone hates. So I cackled maniacally.
I was starting to giggle because I thought you were making a there's no content in Star Wars Battlefront joke.
That's what I thought you were doing.
Many different avenues you could have gone.
Yeah.
That was like the Swiss Army knife of podcast jokes.
There are so many jokes ready to be made about Star Wars games in any given year. There are enough low-quality Star Wars games existing in the world for them to be easy fodder. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Like, are we allowed to talk about...
No,
okay.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Jimmy will not stand for it.
Star Wars is
good.
Have you
seen it?
Yes.
Star Wars is good.
Yeah, and I feel like that's really all you need.
Yeah, of course I did.
Okay.
I feel very reassured coming out of The Force Awakens. I'm like, oh, you didn't fuck that up, and... Mm-hmm. You things are interesting going forward. Okay, I can live with I can live with Star Wars being in this state.
The best part of the movie was walking out of the movie and being satisfied.
Yeah, that was almost like the biggest like diss
but
to
then,
the movie ever.
Then
that
it turned into a reasonable compliment.
My favorite thing about that film was I went and saw it a second time because I went and saw it at midnight because I was terrified of spoilers. Mm-hmm. And
right.
A couple of days later. Went and saw it again, and I was like, watching this without being worried about spoilers, not being hyped up on the midnight launch, knowing what's coming, being able to have, you know, taken a few people's opinions in, this film is still good. If anything, it's maybe better than the first time I saw it. I'm going in looking for criticisms and not seeing them. That makes me very happy that, like, this might actually not be the Phantom Menace again.
It was interesting because I went in, first of all, I had that same terrifying experience, but I didn't get to see it midnight. I saw it Sunday night at 1 a.m. after a big party with a lot of people who had seen it. So that whole party was like, hi, I'm Jimmy. Don't talk to me about Star Wars. But literally, like, came out of the movie and I was like, you know what? I wasn't blown away, but that was pretty good. And the longer I sit on it, the more I'm like, I need to see that again. Wow, yeah. I really enjoyed this. Wow, this part was super awesome. And I'm just like, my love for it is growing longer after I watched it.
I'd say if you manage expectations, you know, like certain things, it's not perfect. But if you manage expectations, and especially I saw all the films before going into this. So I guess my expectations for like, from coming out of the prequels was very high.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, that's what I did. The 6 days running up to that with my housemates, we watched 1 through 6 in that order. And then just prior to going in, I watched recorded TV station interviews with people just before and just after the midnight showing of The Phantom Menace. And I was trying to taper my expectations, knowing what the knowing what The Phantom Menace is, and knowing that people came out of that saying it was the best Star Wars film they'd ever seen. And I was like, I don't want to be that person. And again, I agree that, like, the longer I've sat on it, the more I'm finding to discuss, the more interesting things it leads in with other films, the more that I can compare, like, this is where the prequels went wrong, and this is where this film did those same things much more intelligently. After a second viewing, I think that was the good thing about a second viewing. I knew what to expect, which made managing expectations much easier. I knew what the film was. I'd taken away the big build-up in my head of what it might be. And I came out really pleased.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a second viewing.
Yeah.
So I have a lot to look for again now that I'm like, okay, this and this might mean this, so I need to look again and see this part in context.
There are things I entirely missed until I read about them in articles and then watched a second time and was like, oh my goodness, you're totally right, how did I miss that?
Yep.
So
I think I saw Matt tweet that he watched all the prequels before going.
Yeah.
Which sounds God.
I thought people were over-exaggerating. Okay, I watched it when I was young, and I thought I quite enjoyed the prequels. I watched it again, and oh my God, they're bad. I'll say 1 and 2 were really, really bad. Like, the first one you had, what is the guy's?
Pod racing.
And the second one was
obviously the best part.
Emo Anakin. And then the third one, I say the third one was actually more enjoyable than all of them, which was quite interesting, it was still a mess.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed it.
The third is the best of the prequels, with the exception of it having the singular worst acted line in the entire Star Wars saga, which is that one little kid just before the kid is murdered, who's like, Anakin, what are you doing?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That fucking kid.
I gotta give at least in the running for worst lines is in my opinion it's the Jedi.
In my opinion,
able.
The Jedi is evil. No.
The lines, like, are coarse.
The memories are still
they
like
get
rash,
around
please.
Everywhere.
Sith Lord as an internet commenter.
Well, actually,
Anakin, don't try it. I have the high ground.
God, see, the funny thing is, you guys watched them all leading up to Episode 7.
He turns him into a potato.
My wife and I, we saw 7, you know, last week, and then after a bit, she was like, I want to watch the old ones, let's watch them all. And I was like, okay. So we did 4, 5, 6, and then 1, 2, 3 over the past 4 days, I guess.
Yeah.
And I love 4, 5, and 6. Even she kept turning to me and she's like, wow, these held up really well. I'm like,
exactly.
Yeah, they're fucking great.
Like, 40 years old.
Even Jedi?
It's.
There were 77?
1977. Yeah, so just shy.
Yeah, coming up on 40 years old now, and they've aged very well.
I feel there's a lot that didn't.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
Because the stormtroopers wear CGI. Why? Why?
Well, because how are we going to hire 10,000 extras for the clone factory?
Just copy-paste real footage.
But it would just be one stormtrooper in the shot. It's CGI. Why?
Just use the clone brush on one real stormtrooper, and
Oh my god! The best Star Wars news that's just come out is the unedited original trilogy is coming to Blu-ray. So you'll finally be able to get the Blu-rays of the original trilogy that don't have the giant CGI monster walking in.
Real?
Yeah, this was a thing that got announced like the last week
CGI
or two.
CGI Jabba.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
They are looking at doing that. So
imagine how embarrassing it must be to be George Lucas right now.
Oh gosh.
I mean, you can be embarrassed, but you also have $6 billion, so
rich and embarrassed, the George Lucas story.
Yeah. I am so excited to see the original trilogy without like entire scenes getting like, I can't see the people talking in this scene because a CGI monster is walking in front of this really badly.
Yeah.
The thing is, someone already spent time making a despecialized version that recreated it, and that's the ones I watched. I didn't watch the other ones, so that's gonna be interesting to watch those again and see how the original was.
I had the complete edition that's no longer complete on Blu-ray, so I watched all of the terrible CGI. I got to see young Anakin in episode 6 as a Force ghost.
I mean, to be honest, I grew up with the special edition, the first special editions that came out. And so I was used to the stuff like the really bad song and dance number in Jabba's Palace.
Yeah.
Which I watched that again, and I like talked over the movie, and I turned to my wife and I was like, look at those dancers behind her that are in costume and look amazing. And then they put this weird ass CGI creature in the foreground and make it like a Looney Tunes thing. And,
yeah.
But the thing that got me, the real thing that got me, because I bought the movies for my father-in-law, and then I downloaded these to watch because I'm a nasty pirate, but I purchased them at one point, so it counts. But the version that I downloaded, I didn't realize alien subtitles are not hard burned into the movie. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Huh.
So we watched all 6 movies with no alien subtitles. You want to know the funniest thing? Is it works in the originals and it doesn't work in the prequels.
Yes.
In the originals, every time an alien's talking, it's usually with someone who's speaking English back to them.
Well, either that or their intent is put across pretty well by the puppets.
Yeah, yeah. Like all the scenes where it's like, oh, it's Greedo and Han talking, and Greedo says something and Han will be like, I know, I'll get him the money. And it's like, okay, I understand what's going on. In the prequels, there's parts where it's just Anakin and Watto talking in some language and with no subtitles. God,
Djibouti Daypot Slamo.
God, I'm remembering little Annie trying to.
Let's be real though. The pod racing scene is still awesome.
Here's the thing: I don't hate on young Anakin's actor nearly so much after seeing that kid that can't act in episode 3. I give young Anakin's actor, I'm like, you know what? You were actually half decent. You weren't that bad. You had a bad script, but you know.
Give you a 3 out of 5. Yippees!
You know what haunts me at night is the scene where Jabba, when he's a child, his dad gets murdered.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh. And I'm like, what? What? He didn't say anything. His dad just gets his head cut off. And
what?
Nothing.
Wait. What?
There's a scene. You know, not Jabba the Hutt.
Fett.
Boba. The young Boba.
Jesus, I was like, Jabba the
Hutt. Very, very different character.
You got me thinking about the Jabba the Hutt CGI that was in. That was replaced in there. I was like, my gosh. And it was like in my mind.
I assumed I'd misheard you. I was like, I know what you're talking about, but you can't have said Jabba the Hutt.
Boba. When he was young, his father gets murdered, and he's watching, and he just says, "Oh," and it just cuts. And this,
I feel like the bit where he holds the head up and he like looks sad makes up for that. But
he's holding his father's decapitated head.
I remember first time coming out of that movie and somebody was like, I was praying so hard for that scene not to end with Django's head falling out of the helmet onto the floor.
And him just looking at it.
So okay, I have one question of people who recently rewatched the whole thing, and that is, did you think Return of the Jedi was awful? Or because I feel like that's where the downhill spiral starts to slope.
I feel like there is an awful lot of really good stuff in there. I feel like it is less consistent than the other two movies in the original trilogy, but I don't feel like any of its problems are the same problems that the prequels have. I don't feel like it was any kind of lead into the prequels or anything.
Rewatching all the movies, my experience was that Empire was pretty darn good. The first one is pretty good. And that Empire is actually one of the best movies ever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of the trends with an overuse of CGI and alien slapstick comedy and characters just being super one-dimensional action figure commercials starts with Return of the Jedi. Like, there's no twists in Return of the Jedi. What is a twist? What unexpected, like experimental thing happens in Return of the Jedi?
Well, first of all, Luke's kind of a ruthless motherfucker because he goes to Jabba's palace and says, "Free my friends or I'll fucking kill you all," right, which is not a thing that Luke does any time before that. I mean, Luke gets super angry, almost turns to the dark side. Darth Vader turns good. Speaking of which, fuck Lucas for that one part. No. I can handle anything. But Darth Vader saying no at that part is actually the worst thing to happen to Star Wars.
My favorite thing about that film is so much better if you just cut it at the moment when Vader's helmet is on, he takes the first breath, cut to black. That's how you end that film. You don't have him say a fucking word.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about...
Oh.
You're talking about episode 3. I'm talking about episode 6.
Oh, sorry, the other no. Oh, God.
The re-added no.
Yeah, they added that in. That same no. They added that in when he throws the Emperor over.
It's the same one.
I didn't realize it was the same no. I'm sorry.
That's how bad it is. They took the worst line from episode 3, or arguably, and then pasted it into episode 6, where it's unneeded, unnecessary. It's obvious his struggle.
And then they put in the Force ghosts of Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor at the end of Return of the Jedi when the Ewoks are singing a happy little song. And then they cut to an awful CGI shot of Coruscant with its prequel design bubble spaceships flying around. Yeah. And then goes back to like the 70s original trilogy designs at the Ewok party as they're drumming on decapitated stormtrooper heads. I like the Ewoks really piss me off.
The Ewoks are
the Leia
not
bikini kind of pisses
thing.
A lot. Basically everything that happens in the Jabba scene pisses me off. And that's like the first half of the whole movie.
Look, I'm not going to be some guy who defends things, but everyone... That was a good sentence. Good job. Everyone who's like, "I don't like the Leia bikini," literally, she's slave to a gangster who, like, I mean, it's pretty implied that he's like a monster.
Yeah,
like, I feel like maybe
there's a contextual reason for it.
Yeah,
in my opinion, it's also heavily implied that it's there to sell slave Leia action figures.
Well, I mean, that's part of it, but it's not something where it's
sold.
And Ewok teddy bears.
And Never mind.
It's not as bad as what they did to Padme. Padme was like, you know, like this outgoing, strong person. All of a sudden, she just becomes like a housewife.
Oh, God. Padme's entire arc makes no fucking sense. So she meets this kid for like 2 days, never sees him again. 10 years later, he turns up and goes, "Oh, you don't even remember me? I've thought about you every single day since I last saw you."
He spends
the next half an hour really being really fucking creepy on her, and she actively turns around and says, "I don't like you, please go away, back off, you're fucking creepy." after this, for seemingly no reason.
Next day she loves him.
For seemingly no reason, she's like, oh, actually, I kind of like you now. Fine, we'll kiss. She ignores all of his, like, crazy homicidal tendencies where he's like, I think everyone in the universe should do what I say, even if I have to force them. And she's like, don't see any red flags here. And then, like, the last movie, she goes from being like, oh, yeah, I can break myself out of situations and fight things off. Now she's just... I'm pregnant and I'm sad and I'm very somber, but I'm not going to go away from my crazy, scary man.
And then R2-D2 jetpacks into the scene and shoots people.
Yeah.
As they escape from a video game platformer level.
Yeah.
That
factory is such a video game level.
That fight goes on for so damn long.
Look, this is what happened. This is my wife's idea to watch these prequels. Because we went through 5, 4, and 6, and I was like, no, we're gonna watch the movie now. I'm like, oh no, let's see prequels. I'm like, no, you don't want to see those. There's a scene where she's like, why are they jump? He jumps when they're having a fight in that lava stage.
Yep.
He jumps on this beam. I mean, and you're like, why are they jumping on the beam? Why would you run away there and balance on a beam while trying to fight with laser swords that, you know, if you make a mistake, could cut off a limb. She's like, why are you doing
that?
Know. It's the most ridiculous thing, and it just keeps going. And I don't know. Now I feel like one of those angry Star Wars nerds, like, how do you like the prequels? How? Well,
the only thing you have to do to like the prequels is just every time there's a moment that doesn't make sense, remind yourself, oh, the reason for this scene is, in Anakin's perspective, the Jedi are evil.
and cut. I think we've talked about Star Wars for about 20 minutes now.
Unlimited power!
That was a lot of sounds.
Kill the black guy, please.
On occasion, sometimes, once in a blue moon, on the That One Video Gamer podcast, we do talk about video games.
Yeah.
This is not one of those occasions.
Have any of you guys played anything else this week?
I played a couple of video games this week.
Let's hear
you play this week?
Have any of you played any of Fast Racing Neo since it came out?
Oh my god, so bad. I want so fucking badly.
Wait, what?
Okay, how is it?
there was a lot of talking. I heard the word bad and badly, and I wasn't sure what was going on.
No, we both want to quite a lot.
Okay. Fast Racing Neo is my favorite game in a long time. It is the aesthetic of Wipeout, with like the feeling of the better F-Zero games. You got this button that you use to change your engine color, to hit your boosts and whatnot. I'm not talking about any of that today. I have completed all of the single player content, and finally I unlocked something called Hero Mode.
Oh no.
Hero Mode is the mode, if you've seen footage of this game, you know that this game is about being in space in the future, racing quite fast.
Okay.
Hero Mode, double the speed.
Yes.
Turn your boost bar also into a shield meter. Oh, you are going so fast that you cannot see what's happening. Every time you crash into a corner, you lose your shield. It is the best thing. I have spent like a week this Christmas just being like, I know I will never complete this, but I put on my speakers full volume and I am just gonna race into the infinity point of nothingness forever, and it's amazing. I love
also,
Fast Racing Neo.
It's insanely well optimized. Digital Foundry ran a test, and isn't it only like 400 megabytes?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The reason it's so well optimized, there is a bit of a story to this developer. The last time they released a game was on the Wii, and it was called Fast Racing. And Fast Racing on the Wii had the problem that it had to be under 40 megabytes, because that was WiiWare's, like, at the time, their cap on how large WiiWare games could be.
Jeez.
So they put a fuck ton of time and energy into optimizing for Nintendo hardware ridiculously well, because they wanted to make a really good looking racing game on the Wii. And when it came to the Wii U, they were like, well, we've got no limit on memory space now, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't optimize it well. And they have made a game that runs like really solid frame rate, no like noticeable pop in, good resolution, and it's 400 meg.
Damn.
Yeah. That's a good fucking video game.
Wow.
And it's the only other game in existence that you could fit on your hard drive alongside Xenoblade.
Yes.
How
which,
big is Xenoblade, by the way?
Like 36 gigs or something?
Even if you buy the disc version, you want to have the 10 gig of patches to basically, like, because if you're running it off disc and you download the 10 gig of extra data, you can't install it off disc. You have to download it. That basically gives you the all the speed benefits of having the digital version, but yeah, that's a big video game. I don't know if I talked about this a little bit in some places. I have put like 130 hours into Xenoblade X this month.
Jeez.
I am really digging that game. I'm so into it.
I'm curious because the biggest negative that I was hearing is that, essentially, to summarize, I want to get to the robot, but it takes me 30 hours to get to the robot, and none of that is fun.
Well, I will disagree with parts of that and agree with parts of it. If you are just excited about the robot, it's going to take you about 20 hours to unlock the robot.
Jeez.
Okay, bear with me here. I went into this game only wanting it for the giant robots. I am really into, like, Gundam and Gurren Lagann, and I like really big space robot things.
Okay.
I, in that first 20 hours, did not notice that I didn't have the robot. I'm really fucking into space robots. And within, like, let's say within about 3 hours, I wasn't bothered that I didn't have the robot. And getting my big fucking giant space robot was a pleasant surprise rather than something that I felt held back by. It was the nice tasty carrot to get through the fact that, like, this game, and to me this is a benefit, the opening 20 hours up until you get that robot, the big complaint a lot of people have that I really like is that it doesn't hold your hand at all. It's just like, here is 5 continents. If you want to jump in the water and swim to the 5th continent right now, you can do that, and that's perfectly fine.
Oh, wow.
It is not hand-holding you at all, and I was so overwhelmed with, like, so many things to discover that there was, like, there was too much stuff to do and to want to find and to want to explore that I was not bothered by the lack of giant robots. So
nice.
that is my recommendation. Is if you are going into this for the big giant robots and you don't mind that your opening 20 hours are going to be explore the world, have a big fuck off adventure in this, like, completely, there are no progression blockers. It's just, do you want to go over to that molten lava continent over there? It's going to take you like 20 minutes of swimming, but you'll get there.
That molten lava continent? You can go there.
Yeah, you can go there. You'll be totally underleveled for everything, but you can go there, pick up resources, swim back before anything sees you. And that's totally viable.
Are there sea monsters?
There are. But you can see them on the map. You can avoid them if you don't want to fight them. Like, it's not random battles or anything. So it's very good about, like, having things that completely overlevel you more often than not don't aggro you because they just don't care.
I love that. I think that's good.
I don't know what the level threshold is, but if it's going to one hit kill your whole party, it's probably like, you are an insect. You are not worth my time.
Right.
I'm really excited to swim with some sea monsters now.
Yeah.
I have a random question and a side question then. If you're so into giant robots and everything, did you ever get into the Armored Core series?
Yes, I did.
I've been talking with a few friends that I recently discovered like Armored Core, and I'm just like, wasn't a PlayStation guy, so I didn't have a PS3. I don't have a PS4. But that's where all the Armored Cores that are in recent memory have released, and I want a new one, and I want it for PC because I miss giant robots and flying around and shooting dudes.
Yeah, this is the big problem. It's so many of, like, the really cool giant robot piloting games of recent years have been, like, console exclusives at the times that I didn't have those consoles, and I've had to go back and get them. I know it's not exactly the same thing, but I did go and get the giant Steel Battalion controller. Just because I needed it, and I have been playing the original Steel Battalion just because I like having a control panel and piloting a big old robot that blunders around and blows stuff up. Because that's a cool thing to do.
That's pretty fucking cool.
I want the Steel Battalion controller for everything. I just want it to be my new default controller.
There's a unfortunate lack of Steel Battalion-esque controllers in the world, and I can't wait for a stupid big market of those to open up if it happens alongside the VR headsets.
Oh, I did not think about that.
Yes, I was playing TIE Fighter the other week with an old flight stick, and it just felt so good to be using something different from the usual. I'm sure it could control fine on a controller, but having an actual joystick in your hand, it really, really helps with the immersion of the whole experience. Mm-hmm. This like old-ass 21-year-old game still looks and feels really good because of that joystick.
Yeah. Still the best experience I've had with VR was, I think it was Strike Suit Zero, flying around in a cockpit in that. And I was doing it with quite a nice, like, joystick and throttle that would mm-hmm. register when my fingers were on certain buttons, even if they hadn't been pressed.
Aww.
And, like,
that's
as
cool.
I'm moving the throttle in-game, it's moving my throttle as I'm moving it. It's moving the joystick as I do. If I hover my finger over a button, it's hovering in-game over the button. And I was like, this is what I want. I want to be in the cockpit at the giant space thing.
Did they have, like, camera sensors
on the buttons? It was just a really fancy joystick that, like, was very sensitive on its buttons. So, like, if my finger is resting on the button but not, like, pressing it down, it could feel that my thumb was there. So I'm like,
gosh,
that convinced me that I want to save up and invest in like a big joystick because I want to, I know it's stupid, but I want to be the space captain with my throttle and joystick.
It's not stupid at all.
Yeah,
that's
stupid
quite,
at all.
That's totally what normal people want.
Yeah.
This just brings up an idea for me because I actually got to try out the, was it the Vive?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, HTC. Ooh,
did you have the big empty room demo?
I did.
Okay.
It was at a friend's place, and they have a build of it, and they have a bunch of games and stuff. All I tried out was Fruit Ninja, but I had, like, the big 12x12 space to, like, play it in. And it was one of those things where it's like, I'm not going to try it because I know I'm going to get into it. And I tried it, and I'm like, this is pretty fucking cool. And I don't want to have to buy this, but it's cool. And, like, I just wanted to bring up this thought. I'm pretty sure it was the Vive, but with those two little controllers you have.
The ones with the sort of angular antennas on the top. Or the like satellite dishes.
That's not the one I tried, but I mean like AVR with that. Can you guys imagine VR pod racing?
Yes, please. Pod racing. So my pod racing story. I know we're going a little off track here. A couple of years ago, do any of you remember the arcade machine of the pod racing game that had
the levers, right?
Yes. Yep. I saw one of those secondhand, good condition, on sale for £250 because needed to just didn't have the space for it. And at this point, I was living in my parents' house still. I had no room for it. I considered purchasing it regardless of not having the space to put it anywhere and having the knowledge that my parents would kill me for trying to get it into the house because it was an affordable price range pod racing cabinet. It's the fish that got away. It's my Moby Dick.
Man.
If it makes you feel any better, it was probably suspiciously underpriced.
It was like half an hour from where I lived. I went and looked at the machine because I was like, maybe it's smaller than I think. Maybe I could get it home. It wasn't.
Did it work?
It was in working order.
Did he demo it?
Demoed it.
Okay.
It was working.
Damn. So no one had like pooped in it or anything?
Not that I could tell from like three pod races. It seemed very
really
much to be working
no
and in good condition, and the guy was just like, I'm moving abroad, I don't have space, take this thing off my hands, I won't pay for the transport, you'll have to deal with that yourself, get rid of this for me.
That's a heartbreaker.
Yeah. It's the true love that got away, and that, like, every Valentine's Day I am with my loving fiancé, but I'm actually, there's a little thought bubble, and I'm just picturing that hot racing cabinet. I'm like, one day, my love, one day.
I'm wondering if you could disassemble that and hook it up to a regular monitor.
You probably
just keep the controller.
You probably could. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I could, but someone might be able to.
It must be doable. It's not a task I would want to undertake.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Did I play anything else this week? I replayed Spirit Tracks on the Wii U, that DS Spirit Tracks Zelda game.
Zelda.
Fuck yeah. Any game that makes me blow continuously into the controller. The DS and the Wii U do not have good detection for
good blow detection.
They don't have good blow detection. I spent 45 minutes in Spirit Tracks this week.
I know what that's like.
Stuck trying to play like a four-note like spirit flute section where it's four notes played three times in a row. And just every time I was like, that time, got it perfect. And the game was like, nah, it's not quite right, is it? It's
better.
Not quite right. And I was just like, fuck you not letting me play my fucking video game.
Yeah. They wouldn't know Braid if it punched him in the face. Right?
Blow
detection.
Also, I realize now I probably should have asked at the start of this. Am I right to swear like a sailor? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah,
that's
of course.
Fine then. I always forget to do that, and then come on, I'm just like, ah, blah, fuck this, fuck that.
if we had any rules, we would.
I assumed you would. I just thought I'd just check you weren't being polite to the guest.
We should
get to news. I was going to say, I believe last podcast I called some game fucking garbage like three times in a row. I can't remember what it was though.
That's how garbage it was. Before we do the break, I just want to say I've never played Spirit Tracks, and that mechanic sounds like fucking garbage.
Okay,
so do you seriously have to blow the note?
Yes.
It'll like correct pitch or frequency
something? No, basically all you have is the bottom screen is a set of pan pipes, and there's a little line, okay, and you like use your touchscreen to move which color of the pan pipes is lined up with the line, and that's what note you'll play. The problem is that you like, it happens maybe four times in the game. Each time you're trying to unlock a dungeon, you meet some sage that's like, hey, blow my pipes. And and it'll be like eight bars of very simple music where it's like, he'll play his four notes, you play your four, do it three times in a row. If every one of your notes is picked up perfectly, you can't have a continuous breath. You have to start and stop and have to find starts and stops on each breath to play those notes. If your breaths are slightly too long, slightly too short, pick up as one note rather than having a break between them. One of them doesn't pick up through that whole like measure of three attempts at the song. If one of your 12 notes doesn't pick up perfectly, you can't progress and you can't go to that dungeon. And
so it's not detecting pitch or frequency, it's detecting time.
It's detecting, are you currently blowing? When, how long did you blow for? When did you stop blowing?
Jeez, it's like
and
a police interrogation.
And it's not very good at that.
What? Nintendo's new tech not being that good? What are you
I tried finding other noises it might pick up better. So I was like, it didn't pick up anything, but the only thing it would pick up, and I will do this away from the mic to not blow everyone's ears up, was
sure. Oh no.
So I'm sat in my living room with my housemates and I'm just doing that in the corner of the room while they're watching a film. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm playing the spirit flute.
It's complicated.
I'm busy.
I can explain.
I am trying to be the hero of time here. Just let me blow this.
Yep.
Everything about this, including the innuendos, sounds like garbage.
It kind of is. But I like Zelda games, so I was like, I'll get through it.
Yeah, that feeling.
Yeah.
All right, but we actually have gone on much longer than our usual break period, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some news. Probably get through the news super quick.
We'll see. We'll find out after these messages. Hey guys, have you ever asked for anything for Christmas?
Come on.
No, it was supposed to be like some kind of cheesy commercial style intro.
You know we accept nothing less than hello and welcome.
However, you know, sometimes you want to accept something and you don't get what it is. Well, you don't get what you expect. Sometimes you ask for something from a friend and end up just getting some stupid useless thing with a dick drawn on it. Such as in the case of an unnamed Massachusetts boy whose father found his son opening a PlayStation 4 package and instead receiving a block of wood with a dick drawn on it.
Wait, what?
I must say, seamless segue there. You are the. I will hand over my title. You are the new master of podcasts. I have been usurped.
Unlimited official power.
The ceremony shall happen as soon as possible.
George has been honing his skills for 74 episodes now.
So with these skills, I intend to. Oh wait, no, you're getting a block of wood with a dick on it.
Who's it from?
No one knows. Supposedly no, it's from know. Someone it, in Target.
There's a message. There's a message on the block of wood.
Oh, it's from Cock and Balls with Love.
Cock and Balls with Love.
The presumed fan theory right now, the lore, is that there's some saboteur in the Target assembly line who took a temporary job to steal thousands of dollars worth of PlayStations, thus replacing the content with a block of wood that has a dick on it and says from Cock and Balls with Love. And I feel like I can safely laugh at this story because it's hilarious and it also turned out okay because Target gave him back the PlayStation plus a $100 gift card and we all get to laugh at dicks.
Now, right. I'm glad that this happened with Target because, like, any other smaller chain that wasn't Target would look at a family coming in being like, hey, I bought a PS4. Inside was a block of wood with a cock and balls on it. No other chain is going to believe you and say, sure, that sounds plausible. Have a new PS4 to replace it and $100. Only Target would be like, yeah... That might well have happened. That's entirely plausible.
It's almost
I'm so
like
sorry
they knew
that you've
they
got
expected.
One of our cock and ball PS4s.
We always felt shady about that Chad guy we hired for the holidays. So here you go.
I want the story to be that like they brought it back to Target. And then whoever they brought it back to had this flashback to like 4 weeks prior where they were having a conversation with a disgruntled employee. And he's like, if you don't give me a raise... I'm going to replace every PS4 with a block of wood and draw a dick on it. And he's like, that'll never happen. And it flashes forward again. He's like, oh.
And they say it still had the plastic wrap with the security tags on it. Whoever replaced it with the block impeccably repackaged it, which also brings to light the fact that maybe it could have been someone at Target, which is supported by the fact that this father is also saying that his cousin's friend received a block of dick wood with from another Target in Massachusetts. Or it could be someone at the PlayStation assembly lines whoever's in charge.
I'm going to make an educated guess and say that it was Konami.
Oh. Full circle.
So, yes. I have a big unanswered question about this whole scenario.
Okay.
And I've not seen anyone ask this question, so...
Okay.
This PS4 was apparently an Uncharted Collection version of the PS4, which presumably means it was meant to come with the Uncharted Collection on a nice little disc or something.
Maybe it came on a block of wood instead.
Did they get the game? And if not, what did they get in place of the game? Because in my mind... It's like Uncharted written in like a ballpoint pen on a donut or something. I'm trying to think of anything like grosser that would still have that nice hole in the center that they could be like, yeah, it's fine.
When I ordered my PlayStation 4, which was the Last of Us bundle, I found a surprise inside that was about as insulting as a block of wood with a dick on it.
It was a digital download, wasn't it?
It was a piece of paper with a code for The Last of Us. Which I imagine then when you get an Uncharted Collection bundle, you don't get the disc, you get a piece of paper with not a dick written on it, but a code written on it.
I mean, it's about as you know, pleasant as a dick.
It's about as pleasant. I would have rather been, like, doing things with my own dick for the hour it took for me to download the thing instead when I just had to sit and watch it.
I tried to segue.
I'm sorry, but there are more productive, pleasurable things to do than download your game on a crisp holiday afternoon.
Yeah, I want to say that maybe that's what the $100 gift card was, aside from, you know, the fact that they sold them a block of wood with a dick on it and they wanted to make up for it. Maybe that $100 gift card was also like, and you could buy that game that wasn't in there, because I'm assuming whoever took it probably just took all the codes and they're on some shady website now for $35 a pop.
I do have one other question, and I think this is important to think about.
Okay.
Okay, so Target have been given back the block of wood and have decided, okay, this really seriously happened. We sold someone a cock and balls piece of wood.
Right.
Do you think they just gave the new PS4 to the family? Or do you think that they opened the box and just double-checked first? Do you think at any point there's the moment of, let's just open your PS4. Okay, it's definitely a PS4. It's not a piece of cock and balls wood. Now you can take it. We've seen it. It's good.
Man, that's... I wonder. Now, that's actually an interesting question. Do you think there... I wonder if there's like a cock and balls hunt among Target now to find all the PS4s that are not PS4s.
If you find the final one, then you get to go to the cock and balls factory.
Yeah.
How sad is it that we live in a time where we have to do dick checks on our PlayStation boxes?
Yeah, it's a sad day, and it is a very sad day
indeed.
What
is the world coming to?
You know what was also a very sad day? Segue.
Christmas was a sad day.
Christmas was a sad day. Why was Christmas a sad day?
For a select group of Steam users, Christmas was a sad day because they randomly saw themselves logged in as other people's accounts. They had a cacheting error that I totally missed because I wasn't on Steam for Christmas, but I did get a text message from my friend who was like, Steam's freaking out, man. They want me to pay for everything in rubles, man.
Are you friends with Shaggy?
That's how I read his text, basically.
That's Rick.
I mean, Morty. I don't know. Shut up, Morty. We're using robles today. So basically, for a few hours during Christmas Day, there was this horrible cacheting error where you randomly had some of your personal information, not your payment information, but your email, your name, your address.
Bits of your payment information.
Yeah.
Was it the last four digits? I don't believe it was the last four. But it was some of the digits from your credit card if you stored a credit card rather than using PayPal.
Which feels dangerous to say, but I think for some people is kind of enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that makes me feel uncomfortable.
It's more of my card information than I want someone else to see.
It's four digits more than you want.
Yeah. My experience with this was like... I had like a cartoonish experience with this whole thing because I woke up Christmas morning because we were doing like an afternoon lunch thing with family. Mm-hmm. So I didn't need to be anywhere like promptly. So I got on the computer and I checked, you know, news and stuff and tweeted a bit. But I see Total Biscuit tweet and he's like, Steam is fucked today. People are seeing other people's accounts and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, shit. I need to go check my Steam to make sure everything's okay. So I log in.
Oh,
check.
God, that's the tragedy of it. The irony.
Yeah, and then he tweets 1 minute after I open it. And he's like, whatever you do, don't log into Steam today or something might happen. I was like, fuck. And so I log off. And then he tweets again. And he's like, also, don't log out if you're already logged in.
Oh,
that was
my.
Like, it was like the perfect storm of things. So far, I haven't seen anything. I unlinked my PayPal, changed my PayPal password. I don't have a credit card linked as far as I remember.
Yeah.
And I've been monitoring my credit card stuff and I haven't seen anything. But also I've heard that nobody has seen any like actual like people purchasing shit on their accounts. It was just like personal information leak. As far as I know.
Yeah, as far as directly fraudulently purchasing games on someone else's accounts go, you could not do that. But the fact that your personal information plus some digits of your credit card get out is a huge breach that could be enough for some people, some horrible scumbag identity thefts people. Like, if you did experience it, it would be a very, very safe bet to change it. Your card information as soon as possible.
Right. I am very thankful that I have only ever used PayPal on Steam. I have never been more thankful than this last week.
I guess you ought to get a new card, Jimmy.
I mean, yeah.
Just keep an eye on your stuff. Look, be on the lookout and whatnot. So apparently this wasn't caused at all by any kind of hacking or DDoS or anything. It was just...
Nope, all them.
Caching error. Steam sales pretty big. We fucked up a bit.
Their own fault. And it really...
All days to fuck up.
Yeah, it was a Christmas... What's the opposite of a miracle?
Tragedy.
It was a Christmas tragedy.
Did people rise up in arms, like the rise of the Tomb Raider available on Steam January 2016?
Hot competition for worst segues of all time, this time on TOEG Podcast.
People just kind of tolerated it because Steam's
I'm
in a...
Way, I'm eating banana here, so it's okay.
Banana, Steam, yeah. Authoritarian. Steam is much like the benevolent, big-dicked matriarch of gaming. People just tolerate this shit.
Yeah.
Ow, fuck.
It's like no other company would people have tolerated the complete non-apology that Valve gave, where they were just like, as a result of a configuration change earlier today, a caching issue allowed some users to randomly see pages generated for other users for a period of less than an hour. We're not going to apologize for this. No.
I'm just imagining like Grand Moff Tarkin reporting to Vader.
Oh, Vader. For a period of under an hour, people were able to see other people's generated pages. No big deal. It's smaller than a want that.
Now, witness the power of this fully operational Steam sale.
So, yeah, they didn't apologize. They were just like, oh, some people saw some stuff that they weren't meant to see for an hour.
They eventually sent out a statement to press via email, but they first reported on this problem via a forum post. They kind of the language that they use, the formatting of it, it greatly resembles like accidentally seeing the wrong clip art when you visit a store page, like a little miscellaneous error, fully seeing someone else's personal info.
Because it wasn't an official Steam statement or anything. It was just one of the Valve mods that was like, the thing's happening. We're looking at it.
Valve has been made aware of this and are working on a fix. It only lasted a few hours or whatnot, but I still think this is one of what we might be seeing more of in the future. An example of Valve's hubris kind of getting out of control, which I saw a bit earlier this year when I tried to request a review copy of a Steam link. Apparently their PR email address is Doug Lombardi's email address. They don't have a PR department. It's just Doug Lombardi.
It's just Doug Lombardi.
And he just sent review stuff to PC World, I believe. Everyone else had to buy their own. Because, I mean, there's only so much Doug Lombardi can do, which also means it's basically just Doug Lombardi's favorite publication he'll send stuff to.
Yeah. Basically, if you wanted to be reviewing them, you had to basically hand over the cash to buy one from one of the devs that had one early and review that. Like, I'm not going to name names, but I know some big outlets that paid way above the odds to get Steam links from devs to get reviews up early.
Jeez.
So that's not a good state for Valve's PR.
Yeah, no, they have really bad customer service, really bad PR, and now we're seeing them have a really, really bad internal infrastructure problem. I'm wondering how much this is going to get worse before it gets better. Like remember last year when Gabe made that interview statement about how he wants to make customer service better and nothing ever happened ever?
I don't, but now I'm upset about it.
Well, I mean, it's easy to imagine, right? It did happen. I'm not making it up.
I'm sure
read something like, Gabe is disappointed in Valve's customer service and aims to improve it, and that was like a year ago.
Yeah.
And Valve
are in this position right now where, like, they can sit back and do nothing, and they will rake in a fortune, and people will forgive them. And they're not going to stop because they're Valve, and they don't have to stop because they're Valve, and no one's going to call them out on it.
It's not...
You just see, like, the Onion-esque headline. Gabe Newell disappointed in Valve customer service, stuck in pile of money, and can't get onto the phone to berate them.
And it's not a totally unfair situation. Like, they got there by providing a great service and incredibly cheap prices, but you'd think that as... you know, revenues and profits scale up, so would the quality of some other aspects of their service as well. But apparently that's not happening.
I want improved.
What's that?
Steam.
What's that?
Make it so that the place where I take screenshots doesn't go into user blank name.
Setting a custom screenshot folder would be
Steam apps
so nice.
075 fucking, it's like 12 folders to get to your screenshots, and it changes all the time. And there's just empty folders that are, it's,
which means clearing out your screenshot folder is really hard to do. You have to like do a Windows search for .jpegs.
Literally every time I want to go find a screenshot, I have to Google where are Steam screenshots and like, and like Indiana Jones my way through my folders to get there.
The main thing that I want Valve to hurry up and fix already is the fact that the Steam controller, as nice as it is, it doesn't work unless you have Steam overlay turned on. And if, like us, you're people who do video stuff and have to turn the overlay off so it's not visible on screen during videos, your Steam controller just won't work.
Whoa. I thought you were saying a different thing. You mean you have to have that fucking shift tab business going?
Yep, if you don't have that open, if you don't have that thing that pops up in the corner of the screen and says your friend's logged in, whatever, your Steam controller just doesn't work. Yeah.
Fuck off.
Why can't you just pull a switch on the back that turns it into an Xbox controller like you can with the Logitechs these days?
Because that would be far, far, far too easy, wouldn't it?
Okay.
I'm just imagining anything that doesn't get done at Valve is because it's like the interior of Valve headquarters is an actual like
Death Star,
like a swamp, like an Endor style swamp, but the water is made up of money, and so people like to get to places where they can do their job, they have to like wade through money, and people regularly drown.
I mean, kind of like swamp. No one likes to populate swamps. They're not popular real estate. And the thing with Valve is that they're an incredibly small company for how much money they're pushing through, and they don't have bosses. Everyone like the infrastructure of Valve is really, really weird, and it worked really well for them for setting up Steam, but for like growing and expanding Steam, not so much.
Mm.
And that's why the PR department is just Doug Lombardi and no one else, because there's really like no pressure on them to hire a lot of people and micromanage them all, because no one at Valve. I'm wondering if this is still true, but whenever you would listen to the commentaries in the old Portal and Half-Life games, they would go on and on about how great it was not having titles. No one is anyone else's boss.
Except, obviously, for Mr. Valve himself, because, you know, he's in charge, and what he wants...
Even though I'm...
Yeah, if he doesn't want it to happen, it doesn't happen.
And I'm going to switch off the paid mod thing that you guys switched on now.
Hey, stop that.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Don't do that. We're doing things my way now that you're doing not what I want. Yeah.
The whole paid mod debacle, too. Like, there you go. There's another example of Valve hubris sort of getting out of control as the history goes on.
The problem is, though, well, like, first of all, even as bad as Steam has ever been, like, it's never going to rival that of Uplay or Origin or anything like that, which is, you know, like... subterranean levels of trash. But like, it's also the only thing. Like, Steam does not have a competitor.
That's why they can get away with this.
So they don't need to fucking do anything. They can run it into the ground for all they want, and then all they have to do is say Half-Life 3, and like, they get all their money back and PR is up again.
That's how they got Steam on the ground in the first place. They just said Half-Life 2.
What was that that indie competitor to Steam that existed for a while that no one uses anymore?
Desura?
Desura, that's... Yeah, not Itch.io. Desura. Itch.io's too well known. No, Desura was a thing for like 2 weeks, and then fuck Desura.
I played one game on Desura.
Yep.
I forgot. Who is it by? Thomas Happ?
That sounds...
John Happ?
Thomas Happ is ringing a bell.
That sounds like a person. I don't know who.
Yeah.
It was some game about like ricocheting bullets or like projectiles to like solve puzzles, and there was like timing involved. And it was really cool. It was also 20 minutes for the whole game, and it was like really well designed, and then it just ended. And I was like, that was good, but I mean, I can't plausibly... just recommend this to people and expect any sales for you because it's on Desura, and sorry.
Yeah, I still get codes for games on Desura every now and then, and I just wonder, like, why haven't you put your game on Itch.io? Itch.io's free and easy and doesn't take a big fuss.
Or Steam, because there's no barrier, really, to getting on Steam.
Yeah, not really at this point.
Is there?
I mean, no, you're right, but like
the barrier is $100.
Okay, so there's a $100 barrier.
And enough time or like persistence to get your game through green light and just be like, vote for me.
Which isn't hard to do.
Yeah, just people will vote for any old shit on
that. Like, to get on Steam, you either have to have a really good game, or your game has to be really bad, but you have no integrity.
It's like, yeah, I'll give you codes for it. Why
the middle ground guys, I think, get zero attention because their game is, I don't know.
Well, their games will get through eventually. It's just going to take them until, like, it's going to take them years. It's going to take them until after Steam Greenlight is no longer a thing. They have replaced it by Steam's new indie initiative, and they'll be like, oh, I finally got on Steam, finally.
My zombie survival game isn't selling? Why is that? It's such a good concept.
I used Unit C off that, off the Unity store and everything.
Guess what did get on Steam, though, and this feels like a huge dick move, because Matt did a really great segue earlier, and oh, I'm all anxious and self-conscious.
It's fine. It basically, what I said was basically an ad. Because you guys continue that with
it. I forgot that you segued.
I segued, and then you guys kept going. I was like, oh, people must think like the whole way through that I just did it as an ad, and we're getting paid by Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Shit,
Rise of the Tomb Raider coming out on Steam.
A lot closer than everyone thought, isn't it?
Brought to you a new message from your friends at Squaresoft.
Anyway,
Rise of the Tomb Raider is supposedly going to start coming out on PCs in January 2016, which means that the much touted and much controversial console exclusivity period for this game is going to be lasting a mere 2 months, which is nothing. Nothing.
I feel like this has to be so much earlier than Microsoft planned.
Yeah, like, that there's like a lot of speculation and hype over Bloodborne coming to PC, and if that came out a full year later, that seems reasonable. 2 months for how little they've tried to, or how much they've tried to deflect people away from talking about this game coming out on other platforms is like an amazingly short period.
I mean, I want to say it's because it didn't sell.
It did it not sell?
I think it only did like 60,000 units in the UK in its first month, which is...
That's not a lot.
That's like, you put your game out to die numbers.
Wow, it must
that's
suck to like, be making Tomb Raider games.
Yeah. That's phenomenal for an indie game that from a developer that no one's heard of.
Exactly, and when you put that for a AAA game, that's like, oh god, no, this is not, we can't live with these kind of numbers. These numbers are not, just not acceptable for a game on that scale.
They're also pushing it super hard. Their commercials, the sides of buses, say Rise of the Tomb Raider right now.
In the UK, they strapped six people to a bloody billboard for 24 hours and were like, hey, Tomb Raider, buy it! We put people
what
up
the hell's
here.
Happening? Why are these Tomb Raider games selling? They had a lot of hard time selling the previous one, too. Is it because of the Xbox exclusivity? Is that what's biting them in the ass?
I feel like a lot of people have been waiting for the PC version just because, like, looking back at the last game... The PC version looks so much better, and I think that's what they're waiting for.
If only they knew how right they were.
Yeah, people just can't wait for that Tress effects. Want to get your floaty 3D hair? You gotta have that, and, you know, knowing that that can't be far off, I guess maybe that's what they're waiting on.
So there is a Steam page up, super legit. It wasn't even a link, it's still there. Everything looks right. It's Rise of the Tomb Raider, releasing in 2016. January, which is the first month of 2016. But yeah, and remember how much controversy there was over the console exclusive? People were super mad.
Well, I think people were mad because they thought they were going to have like a 6 month wait for the PC version, and like Microsoft definitely made it sound like it was going to be that.
It sounded like they were.
Yeah, and
they had a hard time selling the first one, even though it got pretty good reviews and a pretty solid fan base. And I'm presuming that the reason they went with a brief console exclusivity deal with Microsoft is to get some money to help out with publishing. Maybe Microsoft decided to push the PC release a bit earlier, maybe, if they were working on the PC release at the same time. Because they're doing this thing now where a lot of times in some Microsoft presentations, you saw this at E3, they'd refer to a game as being Microsoft exclusive, which meant Xbone and PC. And they use that word a lot during the Oculus presentations. There was a partnership between Xbox and Oculus, and they referred to some games as being Microsoft exclusive. And I guess...
I'm guessing that basically just means fuck you, Sony. But
pretty much.
Yeah.
Windows counts as Microsoft. And they also had some quotes releasing about how they wanted to make PC gaming better and make up for games for Windows Live from the last time they said that. And I guess that also means pushing Tomb Raider out earlier a bit. Because they're a little more friendlier towards PC gaming than they were in previous generations, and they had an excuse to, because they'd rather you play games on their own platform, the Xbox, which is weird because they also have another platform called Windows that's the idea. They want to push it out on both, I guess. I hope. But yeah, Rise of the Tomb Raider, this is a game I didn't even bother thinking about because I don't have the console, but now I can bother thinking about it, and I really should go play the 2013 one soon, shouldn't I?
Yeah, the 2013 one was so good. It was, and like this new one, it's one of my games of the year, and I'm just waiting for it to hit PS4 so that people can actually play it, because,
Yeah, PS4 is going to take a while.
I'm just upset that more people can't play such a critically well-received game and that so few people have bought it. That really fucking sucks. I'm really just wondering now, like, does this coming out so early on Xbox One mean the PS4's coming earlier?
They have some period unknown to which they had the license given to Microsoft. And I presume once that's up, there's no reason for them not to put it out on PlayStation. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's actually Microsoft's initiative here wanting to push PC copies as well. I mean, just make everyone money faster.
Yeah, because initially I assumed it was going to be like 6 months for PC and a year for PS4. But I don't know. This version coming so unexpectedly quick, I feel like the PS4 wait might be shorter than we initially thought it might be.
I'm still waiting for Bloodborne on PC.
Oh, gosh.
People keep swearing they saw it in the Steam database.
I'm just going to keep saying it out loud until it happens.
My main thing that I'm sort of worried about seeing is how some of the Souls games have launched on PC is I want us to be sure that gameplay isn't going to be tied to frame rate, so we're not going to get that whole going out of sync issue.
But if you can maintain a consistent 30... it's still going to be better than the PS4 version.
Yeah, that's fair. Ooh.
Like Dark Souls 1 broke at 60 FPS. It was a game designed to be played at 30 FPS via the game logic, and I don't know, maybe they fixed it with Bloodborne, because they fixed that with Dark Souls 2, except for a couple minor issues, weapon degradation.
Yeah.
But like, even the PlayStation 4 version of that game has an absurdly low frame rate during moments.
Yeah, I'm hoping they just lock it to 30 and they put something in there that says, hey, you can change it to 60, you might mess with game logic.
And everyone would rightly hate them for that, but...
Yeah, but at least like they'd know and it wouldn't
honestly
fuck it up.
I have to say, for the first time ever, I was tempted by a PS4 last week. Because I was looking through Walmart for something. I was getting something for like a Christmas party. And I was like, I'll just browse their electronics. And they had a PS4 for $300.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not bad. And it came with Battlefront. But then I was like, I'm not going to play Battlefront.
Nah.
Even though, like, replace that with Bloodborne in that box. And I think that will finally push me over the tipping point. $300 PS4 with Bloodborne. And I'll be like, good enough. I'll buy this $300 one video game. And then I'll probably also play Journey.
You can rent Until Dawn. If you have some friends
some
over...
Some games are coming out this year. Quite a few.
That Until Dawn's an absolute blast. If you get a bunch of drunk friends together and you see how you can get everyone killed.
Right, that's the context in which I would play it.
And you would love it, actually. That's what we did for the Halloween party. Everyone had a huge blast.
And is... Correct me if I'm wrong, Horizon Zero Dawn is on PS4, correct? Or it will be.
Yeah, it's meant to be end of 2016, I think.
That's the second game that will be like, I am interested. I have interest in a PS4, is Horizon Zero Dawn.
I haven't really been excited in any of the other games that studio's made in a while, but I can really get behind red-headed Amazon... fighting mecha robots in like robot dinosaur monster hunter. Like that That's my kind of jam.
I can get hyped for mecha dinosaurs being hunted by, like, the cyberpunk chick from Braid. I'm down. I'm in. Yes, that does seem very cool.
But what if you have a checklist of dinosaurs that you have to kill via their arm cannon and not the other cool gadgets to unlock the arm cannon level 2, which is another cool gadget?
What's that referencing?
Basically, like the Ubisoft sandbox game design.
Oh, wait, is it Ubisoft?
No, it's not, but a lot of I like to temper my... Even though it did look good, I still like
to
temper.
That's fair.
Yeah, I'm going to be hesitant just because I've really not been able to get myself interested in most of the Killzone games. I just find them really... I don't know what it is about them.
It's literally called Killzone. It is a Simpsons parody video game title.
Yeah.
The games may be fine, but when you're working with a name like Killzone, your expectations are somewhere.
Mark my words now. If they come out with a bundle for the PS4 that has, when Horizon Zero Dawn drops, and it's like a special edition with Horizon, and it comes with the thing or whatever, and the PS4 looks different, I'll get that. And then I'll also buy Bloodborne, and I'll play all the good video games. And Journey, because I still haven't played Journey.
Me either.
Oh my goodness, Journey is one of those games. I'm so glad I played it before I knew anything about what it was. I absolutely love Journey. I just picked up the vinyl soundtrack. It's beautiful.
I've heard so much about the game, and I'm still, like, I know I can still have a good experience with it, and that's why I have not ever listened to the Journey soundtrack, because I want to experience it in the game before I just listen to it.
Yeah, that's definitely a good call. Like, my partner really doesn't play video games, and, like, I would say play this with someone who doesn't play video games if you know too much about this game already, and just pick up those vicarious, like, first experiences through someone else. Like, get someone next to you and go through it and watch them get all excited about, oh, I'm doing the thing that everyone knows about. Because that's how I did
cool.
it.
Cool, yeah.
It worked for me.
Stuff to look forward to.
I mean, it is a Bloodborne box, but it's not a bad Bloodborne box.
I mean, if good things happen in 2016, then maybe it'll be also a Last Guardian box or a Horizon Zero Dawn box.
Hopefully,
or a No Man's Sky box, you know, maybe in 2037.
That one's definitely, that's June, I think that one's dated for.
Horizon or Last Guardian or...
Oh, No Man's Sky is June 2016.
Oh, right, no, yeah.
Yeah, sorry for the confusion, yeah.
Because if Last Guardian comes out in 2016, I won't jump out my window. I will do something of personal inconvenience.
You live in a one-story house.
No, I live in a condo. Anyways, I shouldn't say where I live. In that case, we should probably figure out how to jump out the proverbial windows of this podcast.
Oh, look at that segue.
Oh. We did it.
Yeah.
I won the video game.
Go you.
But yeah, that was the real.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm starting to run out of mental steam.
Thanks for listening to the TVG podcast, everyone. If you enjoyed our guest Laura, you can find her at.
You can find me at Laura K Buzz on absolutely everything. LauraKBuzz.com, where I post absolutely everything. Laura K Buzz on YouTube. Laura K Buzz on Patreon. Laura K Buzz on Twitter. Laura K Buzz. Laura K Buzz. Laura K Buzz.
Thanks and for being also... on the podcast, Lurik Buzz.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute blast. Thank you. It's been lovely.
People can also find your writings on Kotaku, correct? Or not Kotaku, excuse me, Destructoid.
Yep, you can find me Monday to Friday in the UK hours as UK editor at Destructoid. I also freelance for Polygon, Kotaku, The Guardian. I also do 7 podcasts a week. I do The Geek Night In, Category Video Games, Oh No Video Games, Year of Steam, The Destructoid UK Podcast, Laura's Gaming Butts, and Podquisition. I think that's it for my list of weekly podcasts.
You are way busier than the rest of us.
If you guys have an aching 10 hours left of your week that you just need to hear Laura's voice, you pretty much have that every week.
And if you found my voice boring, that's fine, so long as you're an insomniac, you can just put my podcasts on and you'll drift right off to sleep. Just make sure you get those download numbers in. As long as you fall asleep, that's fine.
Jeez,
if I can't
even
get
imagine.
Your downloads.
One podcast a week exhausts
What
me.
Happens when you lose your voice? if you lose your voice.
I just power through somehow.
Oh, you don't stop?
No.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I just load myself up on cough sweets and stuff, and I'm like, fuck it, let's power through. Fun story, my voice was going tonight.
Oh my god.
I recorded, I think, 11 hours of Let's Plays back-to-back for a big, long just batch of them. So my idea today was I just got fucking wasted. So I was like, fuck it, I'm too drunk to care about the pain in my throat. It'll be fine.
As I said, I usually keep up with the podquisition and you don't sound off in any way.
No, so long as you just pour alcohol and paracetamol down this throat, it will just continue moving forever.
You suffer for your art.
Yeah, exactly. Days offer for the week. I am not weak. I've got patrons to support.
Yes, go check out Laura's stuff and support her on Patreon if you enjoy her things that much.
Yeah, come listen to my stuff and then give me money so I can continue to live the dream and make stuff at home all day and not get a shitty retail job.
Perfect. Yeah, so go support our Patreon, hashtag bucks for butts.
Oh my god, I love that. Can I steal bucks for butts? How have I not come up with that before this moment?
completely yours to take.
Wonderful.
And all right, where can you find the rest of us? Matt, where can we find you?
MattVisual.com.
You always screw this up. Just tell them the place to find you.
YouTube.com/MattVisual.
Thank you. You can find me at YouTube.com/SunderGamer or on Twitter at SunderCR. And you can find all my stuff pretty much through links on those. And George, where can we find you?
You cannot find me at youtube.com/superbunnyhop because someone took it in 2009. But you can find me at youtube.com/bunnyhopshow. That's not my Twitter account. Man, I really messed up with this stuff, didn't I? I'm at superbunnyhop on Twitter. I'm bunnyhopshow on YouTube. I mean, the website is superbunnyhop.com, but I feel like I really need to just, like, ditch that thing at some point. But, man, in the meantime, watch the YouTube channel. That's what I care about.
Well, what's,
I
just want to know, when are you going to get your personal branding down? Like, you got to have everything in line, like me. You got to get on this.
Can you change a YouTube URL?
YouTube doesn't let you.
How do you do it?
Just bully the person who has it until they give it to you.
I'll try. Do my best.
I've been like sitting on Twitter staring at the name @Sunder for so long. It's some guy who has the kid from Bastion as his picture and his tweets are private. And I'm like, I just want to message him and be like, can we switch? You can take the CR, I'll take the regular one.
Oh god, I know this hassle. I used to run a website called Indie Haven, and we had Indie_Haven for ages, and it was just a man with one tweet who hadn't logged in 3 years, and Twitter would not give it to us.
God.
Yeah.
What a despicable, worse than Hitler human being.
Exactly.
Anyways. But yeah, that's the podcast.
Yeah, real quick, anybody who's still listening at this point, if you want to keep up with the podcast better, go to search TOVG Podcasts Libsyn and go to our Libsyn page, because that's like our site we used to upload, and that has an archive of all of our episodes, because the site's being janky and it like deleted a month worth of just podcasts, not anything else. So that's fun. But the site's not super reliable to keep. But plus, you get it the second it uploads. So, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not subscribed on iTunes, get something like Podtoid or Podcast Addict on Android. Any of those. You'll be able to keep up with it a little bit better.
Okay.
And more consistency.
Okay, we gotta go, though.
Anyway, yeah. Run along. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The bush.
Bye.
The bush.
What?
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.